em sistema de cabo 90.9, aos domingos das 18 às 20 horas, com locução de Eduardo Pereira.
Vai, marinheiro, vai, vai, vai
buscar. When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, different circles is moving. Same day, different time slot. We're now on Fridays at 9 p.m. Join me from 9 to 10 p.m. for an adventure through sound. Who knows? You might just find your next favorite song.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. This week, an exhibit on display at the Tet Center is highlighting the stories of people in Kingston who have faced homelessness and who have found support through Lionhearts. The exhibit, entitled A Sheltered Life, features portraits of 10 individuals who have experienced housing insecurity, with their redemptive stories displayed alongside the work. The project includes work by artists Sherry Dosager, Ben Spadzinski, and Kyla Todd, and also serves as a fundraiser supporting Lionhearts' transitional housing initiatives. At present, 34 persons have been placed into safe, affordable homes through Lionhearts. Still, as of early 2026, more than 570 people in Kingston are experiencing homelessness. Through this exhibit, the artists hope to bring attention to the human stories behind those numbers. I joined artist Kyla Todd at the Tet Gallery this week, and she shared how the project first came together.
Well, it started, I would say, like over a year ago. I was chatting with my friend Al Dosager, and I said to him, I have this idea of drawing, painting portraits and telling stories. And he was like, that's a great idea. And I said, but, you know, I can't do it myself. Like, I don't have a connection with anyone, really. But he did. Like, he works at Lionhearts. And so we decided to work together. And he, because he's sort of like on the ground, you know, like chatting with people. He's somebody that people trust really well. And so he was like, okay, this is a good idea. I'm going to make it happen. It started off slowly. Like, I didn't hear anything for like a few months. And then one day, Al and I, we went and we chatted with some people at the line. It was actually at the shelter that was on Adelaide at the time. And that was, I think, maybe in the summer. And then in September, it was myself, Al, and Sherry, who's the other artist. We all got together and we started chatting. And so from there, it was like Al's job to figure out, okay, who first of all, people have to be willing to tell their stories, right? So whose stories are we going to tell? And then once we started to figure out whose stories we're going to tell, it was like Sherry and I wanted to meet them. So, and the only person that I painted that I didn't get to meet was Andrew, or Andy, but everyone else, like I went down and Ben, our photographer, took a lot of the really awesome, you know, photos, but the ones that I painted from, most of them, except for Andrew, like I took just because I was there meeting with them. We figured out, so I would have figured out who I was painting at least maybe about by December is when my first painting was Justin, so I started painting him, and then basically I spent like the month of January and February, like that's all I did was paint.
Todd says the project was always about more than creating portraits. The artist wanted the work to help people connect with the stories behind each face.
What I wanted, like, and why I wanted it to be art was because, you know, like, art is a, it connects you with people, right? You look at an art piece and you feel something in your heart for whatever reason. And even when you're painting, like, creating a piece of art is like, it's like a part of you. Do you know what I mean? So the whole purpose of this was to show, really, that we're all connected. You know what I mean? Like, we're all humans. These people are in a situation, but we're connected with them. And the idea was to hopefully make us realize that, really, this could happen to anyone. Like, we're all, like, a tragedy or two or, like, a few really bad months away from being in this situation ourselves. And so creating art is, like, a way of breaking down a barrier, I felt.
Every portrait was created with that connection in mind, placing each person in a setting that reflected part of their personal story.
Well, definitely, when we were doing the portraits, we wanted there to be context. Because for one thing, when it's just a painting of, say, a face, and you don't necessarily know the person, you may not feel as connected to just a face. But if you see somebody sitting on bleachers, for example, and you can imagine being there with them. So, like, doing the portraits in a context was important, to show a bit about who they are and their situations. So Andy's on the bleachers because that's where he lived for a good chunk of time, like, under the bleachers. So when they found him, when they were able to talk to him, that's where they talked to him, on the bleachers, because that's where he was living for a good chunk of time. And Kenny, right here, this is the painting with a mop in the bucket. So we painted him in this long hallway because that's the hallway of the shelter. So if you read his story, you'll realize that he has been working at the shelter. But just showing him in this context was important to us. Mm-hmm. You know, and Phyllis knitting. So for me, like, Phyllis is the one that her story breaks my heart. Well, they all are heartbreaking, but just to know that she's in a safe place right now and knitting, that it's really important.
Since the opening show last weekend, Todd says the exhibit has drawn strong reactions from visitors, many of whom have been deeply moved by the stories being shared.
There's quite a lot of people here, and people were moved by the stories, and we had some people who were crying, you know, because it's really sad, some of the situations. And people were very happy that that we've done this. And I was talking to a woman from City Hall, and she wants to take the whole thing down to City Hall. It's a possibility. And people were just overall very supportive of the project. And I think a lot of people resonated with sort of our intentions. Certain people resonated with certain people's stories, right? Like, so some people would come up to me and say, like, oh my gosh, like, Phyllis's story. And I was like, I know. You know, so people saying that they really loved the stories. They loved how they were written. They loved how, it was Al who wrote the stories, and it just felt like somebody was just speaking. Do you know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel formal. It just felt like a person telling the story in a really meaningful way.
For Todd, the goal of the project is ultimately connection, helping people recognize the humanity they share with those whose lives have taken very different paths.
I hope that they walk away feeling a greater sense of their connection to other humans. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're all in this together, and we are here, I don't know, we're here for each other. Like, this idea that we are separate from each other, like, I want us to be able to understand this, like, shared humanity that we have.
A Sheltered Life will be on display in the Tech Gallery until Friday, March 13th. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. I'm Henry, here with your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News on CFRC 101.9 FM or online at cfrc.ca. A group of Queen's students and a faculty member who were stranded in Doha, Qatar, following regional airspace shutdowns, have now safely returned to Canada. The group, 16 students traveling with biology professor Stephen Longheed, had been returning from a field study course in Sri Lanka when their flight toward Toronto was forced to turn around on February 28th after airspace closures linked to the escalating conflict in the Middle East. After landing back in Doha, the group spent about a week waiting in a hotel while flights across the region were disrupted. During that time, Queen's University said it remained in regular contact with the travelers and their families while coordinating with travel assistance services and Canadian officials. In a statement released Tuesday, March 10th, the university confirmed that the students and Longheed successfully returned to Canada, landing in Toronto on Monday night. Some students have since traveled home to their families, while others have returned to Kingston as the winter term continues. In on-campus affairs, developments continue following the resignation of Alma Mater Society President Jana Amer. At a special assembly meeting held March 3rd, beginning at 7 p.m., the AMS Assembly formally voted to accept Amer's resignation after weeks of controversy surrounding her use of the presidential credit card. The meeting was chaired by AMS Chief Governance Officer and focused primarily on a motion confirming the terms of the resignation. Amer had originally announced her decision to step down on March 1st, stating that the AMS deserves stability, focus, and the ability to move forward. Her resignation became effective as of March 9th, leaving the undergraduate student government without a president for the remainder of the term. The issue stems from revelations earlier this year that some personal purchases, including clothing, Uber rides, and a Costco transaction, had been mistakenly charged to the AMS presidential credit card. In the aftermath, AMS executives have acknowledged the organization is in what they describe as a fragile state while preparing for the leadership transition. The Vice President of University Affairs and Vice President of Operations have both said maintaining continuity in service and governance is the immediate priority as the society determines how to fill the vacancy through the end of the academic year. In other on-campus news, inner-city transportation operations are expanding. German mobility company Flexbus has added a new stop directly on the Queen's campus as part of an expansion of its Ontario routes. The service now connects Kingston with cities including Toronto and Ottawa, with two daily departures planned. The new stop is intended to provide an additional travel option for students and Kingston residents who previously relied primarily on Via Rail, Megabus, and other regional bus carriers. The company says the move is part of its broader strategy to increase connections between mid-sized cities and major urban centers across Ontario. In additional university news with international implications, a senior military fellowship previously connected to Queen's has been cancelled by the United States government. The decision was announced February 27th by officials in the Trump administration who stated they would discontinue the fellowship agreement with Queen's and other institutions they criticized as woke breeding grounds. The fellowship had historically brought senior military officers to Canadian universities for academic exchange and research. Queen's is among the institutions affected by the cancellation, which reflects broader tensions between the administration and universities it perceives as politically opposed to its policies. Finally, new scientific research from Queen's is shedding light on the composition of the Earth itself. Researchers at the university are using geoneutrinos, subatomic particles produced during radioactive decay deep within the planet, to better understand the structure and materials that make up the Earth's interior. Because geoneutrinos can travel through rock and metal with very little interference, scientists can measure them to infer information about the distribution of radioactive elements within the mantle and crust. The research contributes to a long-standing question in geology: precisely what materials make up the deep interior of the Earth, and how those materials drive processes such as mantle convection and the planet's internal heat. I've been Henry Walker here with your Queen's Campus Beat on CFRC 101.9 FM.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, March 11th, high of 8. But with the rain and snow mix in the forecast, it's going to feel closer to 3, and then overnight will drop down to minus 3. Thursday, March 12th, daytime high of 1 degree, overnight low of minus 7.
Friday, March 13th. That's right, Friday the 13th. A scary little bit of snow in the forecast. Not too much accumulation, but you hate to see it all the same. Going to feel closer to minus 4, even though the daytime high is listed at 2. Saturday, March 14th. Right around 0 for your daytime high, feeling closer to minus 6. Sunday, March 15th, high of 3 degrees, but afternoon snow in the forecast, feeling closer to minus 4. And then starting off next week, Monday, March 16th, daytime high of 3, feeling closer to minus 4, with an overnight low of minus 12. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, overnight street parking restrictions have been eased as of March 1st. This means that overnight street parking is only banned when the weather conditions require it. In terms of road closures for the week, Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed indefinitely to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. The other major road closure for this week is Berry Street to Queen, which is closed indefinitely for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. That's it. That's all I have for you this week. This is Jesse Bell signing off and wishing you all safe travels.
What's your favorite hockey team? I love the Habs. Go Habs, go. Hello, hello, and happy Leprechaun Week. It's your girl Gigi, CFRC's newest intern, and you're listening to What's Live at 5 on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up on this segment, I've got K-Town's hottest concert and event calendars for the week, starting with events. On Wednesday, March 11th, Why Not Theater presents What You Won't Do for Love, a hybrid live theater and film performance starring renowned environmentalists Drs. David Suzuki and Tara Cullis, reflecting on their 50-year relationship, their shared adventures, and their advocacy for the planet. This charming and conversational show asks, can we learn to love the planet as much as we love other people? That's so beautiful for me. I wish that kind of love for everyone who wants it. Find them at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rose and Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. The Wonderful Women Community Choir will be meeting at Crossroads United Church at 1 p.m. until 3 o'clock p.m. Don't forget to bring your wonderful voices. Are you an adult who faces social anxiety barriers? Not to fret, I've got something just for you. A social anxiety improv class designed with extra care to make sure you always feel supported. Drop by at the Tet Center at 5 p.m. until 7 o'clock p.m. Feeling crafty or looking for a new DIY? On Thursday, March 12th, visit the Craft Collective featuring DIY sugar scrubs at Duncan MacArthur Hall, room A330 at 12 p.m. until 1 o'clock p.m. Sweet Surrender, a comedy by Matthew McKeever, will also be happening on Thursday at the Domino Theater, the Davies Foundation Auditorium, at 7:30 p.m. Winter's calling, but we're declining her. Something in the Water Brewing Company is turning up the heat with a swimsuit beach party. Throw on your best beach wear, tropical shirt, sunnies, or full resort core fantasy. There's even a prize for best beach wear, so don't hold back. Expect fruity drinks, bright flavors, and your first beer on the house. Tickets are selling fast, so be sure to get yours soon. Thursday at Something in the Water Brewing Company at 7 p.m. until 11 o'clock p.m. Do you like bingo? Now, what about, and hear me out, drag bingo? Interested? Daft Brewing at 7 p.m. until 11 p.m. Be there or be a square. Can't get enough of après-ski? Head on over to 100 Below Duck Pond, an après-ski event sponsored by Jaeger at the Toucan at 9:30 p.m. until 1 o'clock a.m. On Friday, March 13th, stay safe and check out a perfectly reasonable night of comedy at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. The Kingston beloved Fish Friday returns to the Italo-Canadian Club of Kingston, inspired by the long-standing Italian practice of enjoying seafood during Lent. Fish Friday has grown into a much-anticipated community event open to everyone. Whether you observe the tradition or simply love a generous seafood buffet, this is a night to gather, savor, and celebrate. Drop in anytime between 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Also on Friday, come out and show us your talent at Open Mic at Storrington Lions Club Hall at 5:30 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. And of course, Friday night karaoke at The Buckle at 9 o'clock p.m. Maybe this time we could do some Celtic tunes, because on Saturday, March 14th, we celebrate Paddy's. Happy early St. Patrick's Day from your number one certified leprechaun, and I better see everyone's best jig. If you're looking for activities to do, I've got you covered. Join Diana Jackson for Paper as Sculpture Workshop, a playful hands-on workshop exploring abstract printmaking, memory, and sculptural form. Find her at the Tet Center at 11 a.m. until 4 o'clock p.m. Every 2 weeks, four artists, Patty Groom, Michel Larose, Bob Young, and Michael Flault, gather to share new work and the quiet discipline of critique. The setting is informal. Canvases leaning against the walls, the scent of paint in the air, talk that begins softly and deepens with trust. Each artist brings a distinct vision shaped by years of practice beyond the studio. Interested to see what they've got? Drop by the collective session exhibit opening at Kingston Frameworks at 5 p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. On Sunday, March 15th, we have Curious George, the Golden Meatball. Based on the books by Margaret and H.A. Ray and the play owned by Universal Stage Productions, join Curious George for a lovable adventure, specifically designed for young audiences, that is sure to leave your audiences singing and swinging down the aisles. Check it out at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium at 3:30 p.m. Swing by the Memorial Center Farmers Market at the Kingston Memorial Center grounds at 9 a.m. until 1 o'clock p.m. for fresh foods and to show your support to local vendors. And of course, swing by Sunday Fun Day for fun activities at the Great Lakes Museum at 10 a.m. until 1 o'clock p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Next up, our concerts calendar. Wednesday, March 11th, I've got a packed night of live music across the city. Over at the Bank Gastro Bar, Head Over Heels perform from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., playing some great folk, jazz, classic rock, and contemporary tunes. To finish off your night, join and cheer on Frank Ryan as he performs live at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 8 to 11 p.m. On Thursday, March 12th at 12 p.m., enjoy a beautiful midday performance at St. George's Cathedral. The fundraising recital by Mellow's Choir and Period Instruments features uplifting Renaissance and Baroque works by Bach, Byrd, and Monteverdi. It's a free will offering with donations supporting Mellow's concerts and early music education outreach. The recital runs until 12:50 p.m. In the evening, Juno Award winner Steve Mariner takes the stage at the club at the RCHA from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. This Ottawa-raised, Toronto-based multi-instrumentalist and Maple Blues Award winner is known as one of Canada's hardest-working performers, and this is your chance to see him up close and personal. Wrapping up the night, Lucanus Pell performs at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., giving us 3 hours of great pop, rock, and indie tunes to get us in the weekend spirit. On Friday the 13th at 5 p.m., Matt Dixon performs at the Cove Inn until 8 p.m., while Tyler Brett Forks brings an acoustic mix of classics and originals to the Waterfront River Pub and Terrace from 6 to 9 p.m. Celebrate St. Paddy's in a big way at The Spire, starting at 7:30 p.m. with East Coast Experience featuring Irish Millie. Expect high-energy East Coast and Celtic music, big harmonies, and full St. Paddy spirits. Doors open at 7 p.m. Also, don't forget about International Women's Day at the club at the RCHA from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., led by Marion Drexler Band. An unforgettable night honoring and uplifting women through the power of music. If you're planning on having a late night, head to the Toucan Worth Sons of Rick and TV Dog take the stage from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. On Saturday, March 14th, I've got the spotlight event of the evening. My favorite, Jazz at Lincoln Center. Great American crooners at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. This show features Robbie Lee, Chanel Johns, and Downbeat Magazine's number one rising star male vocalist Benny Benack III, celebrating legends like Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and Bobby Darin. Expect timeless classics like I've Got You Under My Skin, Misty, and Moon River, plus stories from jazz history. Also at 7:30 p.m., the Celtic Kitchen Party, presented with Kingston Senior Center and Spearhead Brewing Company, takes over the Spire for a lively East Coast-inspired celebration. Bit more of a country fan? catch Nate Holler at the Broom Factory at 7:30 to 10 o'clock p.m. Or head over to one of my favorite places, the Toucan, for No More New Band and Why Go from 10:30 p.m. until 2 a.m. On Sunday, March 15th, to wrap up the week nice and early, we got Hands in Her Pockets at the Kingston Grand Theater at 2 p.m. Also at 2 p.m., Kent Nicholson performs some great pop, rock, and indie hits at Spearhead Brewing Company. Can't make that one? No worries, he's got another set at 5 o'clock p.m. At 7 o'clock p.m., don't miss Sean McCann as he sings The Great Big Songbook at the Spire, an evening of unforgettable songs and stories. The Rock Orchestra by Candlelight is also coming to Kingston at Slush Puppy Place at 8 o'clock p.m., bringing on a dramatic fusion of rock anthems and classical strings in a candlelit setting, a concert you can't miss. And closing out the week full of genres of music, we've got Scott Owen hitting the stage at the Brass Pub with a night full of country tunes at 10 o'clock p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. No matter what you're into this week, music, food, dancing, or just pretending you have your life together, I've got you covered. For more details on all these events, check out cfrc.ca or lock in right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. You're listening to Gigi on CFRC Radio, and from me to you, have the best week ever, be safe, be kind, and I'll catch you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from local rock band Cassador's new album entitled Mama Might Have Raised a Fool. The new album, released on November 4th, is Cassador's third full-length. It blends the nostalgia of early 2000s indie rock with modern influences. Throughout, Cassador delivers a locally created and written 10-song album that comes out swinging with cheeky, down-to-earth, and worn-around-the-edges straight-up rock. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Mama Might Have Raised a Fool by Cassador on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Big Man Keen right now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Another bullet cuts down, 'cause you get nothing, 'cause you see my heart. Hey everybody, this is Chris Jackson on CFRC, letting my love shine bright, 101.9 FM.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is underway. From now until March 31st, recharge your batteries Francophone style and enjoy shows, contests, local activities, and free film screenings. Check it all out on rvf.ca.
Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie are underway. From now until March 31st, recharge your batteries Francophone style and enjoy shows, contests, local activities, and free film screenings. Check it out on rvf.ca.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with composer, teacher, and former CBC radio personality, Pat Carab. Pat is from the village of Saint-Pierre-Joly in Manitoba and currently lives in Vancouver, BC, where he is the director of the Chan Center for the Performing Arts. Pat and I spoke about his musical background and work, his experience as a 60s scooper, and his efforts to learn Michif, the endangered orally-based language of the Métis people. Here is our conversation. Pat, how did you get into music?
Oh, gosh, how did I get into music? Well, that was kind of random, you know? Like, I'm a 60s scooper, right? So I was adopted out and brought up by a wonderful family, and one day I just came home and said, I want piano lessons. You know, I was about 5 and nobody I knew played the piano or anything like it, you know, so it was kind of weird. And my parents said, okay, well, we're not going to buy you a piano yet. So I was going into like grade 1 by the time this was all organized, and I had to give up my recess for a year basically and go practice in the nuns' convent. And I kept doing it, so they went, okay, I guess we'll buy a piano. And I always really loved music, and I was drawn to it in a whole bunch of different ways. And, you know, you think when you're a little kid, you're probably more likely to be a pop musician or something, or maybe a public school music teacher. But as I got into university and started seeing other pathways, then I ended up going into the kind of more serious music.
Ken, where has that taken you?
Yeah, it's been a pretty great life, really. I ended up getting a PhD from the City University of New York. I mean, I started out in Manitoba. I did my undergrad in Manitoba. Then I went to the Banff Center for a year. And then I did my master's at Western and got my PhD at City University. And then came back, you know, at that point, the Canadian dollar was even worse than it is now, if that's imaginable. And so after 3 years, we thought, now I guess we're going to come home. And I, you know, started freelancing a bit. And we organized our own concert series, and we started a music publishing company, and just a bunch of stuff. You know, there was, you're going, we're young, we're going to do all this exciting things. And so it turned out that, like, by the time I was in my early 30s, I was already the dean of music at Brandon University. So I kind of started as the dean, which is a bit weird, but that's the way my life has gone. So, and I was at Brandon University for 27 years, did a lot of different things. I was composer in residence at the Winnipeg Symphony for 6 years. I was an on-air host for CBC for a couple of years. And I've always composed. And then in 2019, I got the offer to come out to Vancouver to be the director of the School of Music out here. And I just finished not too long ago a 5-year term of that, and now I'm running the Chan Center. So, my musical life is, even though I'm primarily a composer of what would be called fairly serious music, I've always been interested in popular music and stuff. So the Chan does mostly non-classical music. And the CBC show that I had was about the crossover between classical and non-classical music. So it's always been an interest.
You mentioned the 60s scoop earlier. Just if we have listeners that aren't familiar with that term or don't know much about it, sure. If you could unpack it.
Sure, Sure. Wow. Unpack it. Yeah, that could take a while.
Yeah.
in Canada, I was born in 58, so I was in the pilot project, I guess. The Canadian government and the churches had a stated objective of trying to essentially get rid of Indigenous people. So there was pretty regular adopting out and taking away of young children from Indigenous parents. So my mom is Métis on both her parents' side, and she was quite young, and so not a big surprise, but they ended up taking me away and adopting me out. And that was kind of organized by the church, but also by family services. And I tried to connect to my birth family when I was in my early 30s, and that wasn't possible then. But they did give me some identifying information and some of the, I cringed when I read some of the file about my birth mom, because I was fortunate to reconnect with her later, and she was quite lovely, but she had just been told she was a bad girl and didn't know her responsibility to God, more or less. And so life was not so easy for her. I was very fortunate to be, adopted into a really nice family. But now I've reconnected with my whole Métis family. So I've got four sisters and another brother who was also adopted out. So it's a complicated situation, and it's very common in Canada, particularly, even within my adopted family, my older sister, my adopted sister, her and her husband adopted a Cree girl when she was quite young. So, it was quite common for people who couldn't have kids or wanted to help kids or whatever. A lot of times it didn't work out very well, but I was super lucky.
So you released a cycle of three works called Métis songs for voice and string quartet. Can you tell me more about these songs and why you chose them?
Yeah, sure. That was a really fun project. I got a call from Harbourfront in Toronto, and they wanted something that kind of spoke to my Métis heritage. So I was particularly interested in starting with, there's a very interesting composer by the name of Pierre Falcon, who was kind of the Métis bard of Red River, and he wrote a lot of songs. And so I wanted to take one of his texts and then kind of redo it for myself. And then there's a really wonderful Métis poet named Gregory Schofield, who teaches at the University of Victoria, that I had met. And so I wanted to do something of one of his songs as well. And then in the middle, there's a very famous line from Louis Riel, who was the kind of father of the Métis people, where he says, "My people will sleep for 100 years, and then they will wake because of the artists." And so I kind of wanted to do something that was it's a vocalese. And it was really fun to do that project. So I helped to curate the whole concert, which included several other Métis composers and a Métis singer, as well as my two kids played in the string quartet. So there was a lot of Métis going on.
You mentioned to me earlier that you're learning Mi'kmaq. How's that going?
Well, it's a slow process. I'm in Vancouver now, and I don't know a fluent Mi'kmaq speaker out here. So it's mostly been online courses, which has been a lot of fun. I took two online courses last year, and two wonderful cookums or grandmas were delivering the course, and it was just like being back home. So even though I grew up adopted out, a lot of the kids in my neighborhood were Métis. So I knew them, I knew their families, I know the sound of the language. People weren't speaking it a lot, but I certainly grew up with the sound of the language, which is primarily Cree kind of words with really Manitoba French pronunciation of French words. So it's not Parisian French, to say the least, and it's not even Quebec French, which... it's very hard dialect, which is kind of fun. The challenge there, though, is the spelling drives me absolutely bonkers, because they spell everything phonetically. And so I look at a word like, I wrote a piece called the Dilo, but in Mi'kmaq it's spelled D-I-L-O-O, but it means water. And, mm-hmm. So it's just like I look in, you know, so I learned a fair bit of French when I was growing up and in school and stuff. And I did French reading for my musicology courses and stuff like that. But so I look at the words and then I go, oh, geez, that's just a normal word that I would be able to say if it was spelled properly, but no, it's not going to be spelled properly. So I have a couple of apps on my phone where I can look words up and, you know, you can do a little practice and stuff. So really now it's trying to figure out how to build my network of other people who are trying to learn Machif, because there's a lot of us who are trying to learn it. I mean, I think there were 500 people signed up for this online course with the Kukums.
So my understanding of Machif is it has a lot of different dialects, some more French-based, maybe some English-based. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So my family's from a little town called Saint-Pierre-Joly, just outside of Winnipeg. And it was more of a French Machif. So there's three main dialects. There's a French Machif, there's a Southern Machif, and there's a Northern Machif. And so I'm trying to learn more of the Southern Machif, because I spent most of my time more down in that Southern area, and it just made more sense for me. My home Métis area is still Brandon, because I was in Brandon when I registered, and most of them there speak Southern Machif. But from the Kukums, they were talking about, oh, I went to Edmonton and I couldn't understand a word anybody was saying because I'm not from there. I'm from Southern Saskatchewan, you know. So it's a little bit challenging. I do have a lovely French Machif dictionary that I bought, and that was put together. There's a really nice project at the University of Winnipeg where they've recognized the different types of Machif, and they're starting to put dictionaries together and stuff. The Louis Riel Institute has a couple of apps out that allow you to pick Southern Machif or French Machif. But again, you know, the French Machif is really just Manitoba French with a really hard accent and not the best grammar.
How has learning Machif enriched your life?
Oh, it's, I really enjoy it. I mean, partly it's when you grow up adopted, you don't really have any culture to claim. You know, you can't really claim your adopted parents' history. So, you know, really since I've been connected back with my family and I'm a registered member of the Manitoba Métis Federation, you know, so that just helps me to feel grounded more in where I'm from and who I am. And I mean, out here in British Columbia, and I'm on stage still a lot introducing concerts, and it's very normal here. And back home in Métis circles, it's very common that you have to say who you are, where you're from, who your family is, you know, what your territory is, what your job is, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where I am in learning and being able to express who I am and where I'm from.
Have any of your kids been interested in learning or?
Well, I think my kids are both musicians, and my son is in Montreal, so it's pretty hard for him there because they don't even really want to know about Métis, right? For them, we're Francophones, we're French, and that's been one of those challenges, even getting recognition of the fact that there are Métis. He has a sash. Like, we do have some of our cultural things that, and he just recorded a piece of mine called Red River, a cello sonata that should be out soon. And so he's premiered and commissioned works by me and by other Métis composers. Our daughter is out here, and so she's actually become a little more interested in traditional Métis fiddling because she's a violinist. So I think her energy is more spent trying to learn some jigs.
I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
That was my conversation with composer, teacher, and former CBC radio personality, Pat Carabra, who grew up in Manitoba and currently lives in Vancouver, BC. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in. Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Marie-Ève Fontaine, theater artist and artistic director of the Théâtre Cercle Molière in St. Boniface, Manitoba. Marie-Ève and I spoke about her theater background, the Cercle Molière's storied 100-year history, and its future as a gathering place and a place for fun in the community. Here's our conversation. You're the artistic director of Le Théâtre Cercle Molière, which has just celebrated its centennial. Can you tell us more about the theater and its rich history?
Absolutely. So it was founded 100 years ago by 3 gentlemen from the community. 2 of them were, I think, originally from Europe, and one was from Quebec. So they all settled in St. Boniface. And they founded the company at a moment where French was banned from schools. So one of the intentions of the company was to just, you know, keep the culture going. And really for the first, you know, 50, even 60 years of the company, it was run by volunteers, just passionate people from the community who really enjoyed making theater and were passionate about the French language and wanted to keep that going. And I think from the get-go as well, there was also the intention of connecting with the Anglophone community. Because we're a minority in Manitoba, we live with English people every day. So instead of going in a contrarian kind of direction, they kind of wanted to create that relationship. So through one of their first artistic directors, Pauline Dutad, who was a really well-known visual artist in the English Anglophone community, they really started. You know, the artistic communities would mix. So that's really lovely. And so in I think 1967, Roland Mahé was the third or the fourth artistic director of the company, came into the artistic position, and he kind of professionalized the theater at that point. So the Manitoba and Canadian Arts Councils were kind of getting set up at the time, and funding was becoming available for theater companies. And during his 44-year tenancy as artistic director, pretty long one, but he managed to get the company to be from semi-professional to professional. So the actors and the designers are nowadays professional, and they get paid for their work. And then we also offer training to the community and kind of encourage and promote professional and community involvement in the arts.
How has the Cercle contributed to the cultural life of the Francophonie in Manitoba and in Canada?
Yeah, I think it's huge, actually. I think that it's probably one of I like to say that it's one of the major organs of the community. First off, because at the time it was founded, French language was going through a rough time in the province, so they kind of kept that going. And I think it really became like the kind of a role model for Francophones, and also how to maintaining the language and the high level, like Pauline Boutal, who was Roland Mahé's predecessor. She was there for 27 years. And she put a lot of importance on the verb and the words and the diction and the level of French. So for the whole time that she was there, and her husband was her predecessor too. So the first 50 years was basically Pauline and her husband Arthur. They were French. They were both from France, from different regions. So the company would put up mostly productions that were from the French repertoire, if you will. And then with Roland Mahé's arrival, he kind of started to switch it up. So there was a major play that happened in Quebec in the 60s called Les Belles Sœurs by Michel Tremblay. And it was the first time that there was a play, presented the French-Canadian language on stage. Before that, we weren't represented on stage. So that was a huge turning point for Quebec, and also for us, because we presented that play a few years after it went up in Montreal, and it was a revelation that we could be ourselves on stage. And that's was when the Franco-Manitoban dramaturgy really took off. Ramaye started investing in artists who had things to say and who got comfortable writing in the real language that we speak, which sometimes is Franglish. And so that was a huge turning point for the company. And I think that for a long time, people have looked up to Lisette Molière and have come in to see themselves on stage. And we're at a new turning point now because the community is changing a lot. There's a lot of immigration. We're getting a lot of immigration from the Francophone African countries. And the projections are huge. In a few years from now, most of the Francophone community will come from the African continent. So this is another turning point where the company kind of needs to adapt to that new audience, I think, so that they also feel represented on stage. And that is kind of tricky because, of course, the company was built by the Franco-Manitobans who were here, who have been here for a long time. And so now we kind of need to open up the space and share. And in the last decade, my predecessor, Geneviève Pelletier, has done a lot of work to include indigenous voices too, herself being Métis from La Rivière Rouge. And she really promoted the indigenous voices and perspectives. So it's kind of a balancing act now for me. It's making sure that the original audience feels represented, bringing in this new audience coming from the African and other regions of the world too, but international cacophony, if you will, and at the same time maintaining our link with the Anglophone community. About 10% of our audience comes from the Anglophone community, because I think that we offer theater that is a little more cutting edge than what is offered by the Anglophone companies here in town. And it's just a culture thing. Just in French, we have a tendency where we get a little more funding so we can take more artistic risks. So some of the Anglophones who are a little artsier like to come to Cercle Molière as well. So that's kind of where we're at right now. It's a balancing act, I think, but I'm really focused on making the Cercle Molière a gathering place for all of the community. So we'll see if I can help make that happen.
And how did you become involved with the theater?
I grew up in St. Boniface. I was born here, and my parents were very much involved in the cultural community from the get-go. My dad founded the Improv League, which is 35 years old this year, still going strong. So the Improv League is older than I am. My mom is a puppeteer and has worked a lot with schools and has put up shows that have poured across the province and across the country. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as they say. And Le Cercle Molière has been running a youth theater festival for the past 55 years. So we're on our 56th edition this year. And I started out, I did a few productions with my parents when I was a young kid. But I also, Le Festival Théâtre Jeunesse was a really important moment for me, because I was just, I think I was a natural at being on stage, and it comes from being around my parents and that kind of scene. But I just really liked it, and I pursued studies at the University of Ottawa in theater, and just really, really loved the kind of universe of all the theater references and how that like opens up to the world, and how we kind of interpret the world through putting stories on stage and stuff like that. And in 2023, I co-produced a show with Le Cercle Molière based on a Gabriel Roy book. And it was a wonderful adventure. I play with my mom on stage in that show, and with another wonderful musician called Gérard Laroche, who's a Franco-Manitoban superstar. And I wrote that show, and we put it all together with Le Cercle Molière. So I got to know the team really well during that time, because we developed it over 3-4 years, and we presented it, and it was a pretty big hit, and we went on to go on tour across Canada, and we still have touring left this year. But it was an opportunity for me to prove myself as a an artistic leader, I would say, and also to collaborate with Lisette and get to know that machine, you know. And so when the job opened up, I had been away from Manitoba for 15 years and I was kind of ready for a comeback, but it's tough being a Francophone professional artist, theater artist in Manitoba. The only people I can play for are the Septmagyar, and I can do my own thing, but then I like French theater. That's what I want to do. So when the job opened up, I thought, that's it. The universe is offering me this little opportunity. And it's really wonderful. I'm really looking forward to the next couple of years.
So this year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie theme is Activate Your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in everyday life?
I think it's, I have to stay interested in learning new things and staying open about what it is to be Francophone and what is the French language and how much English are we willing to let exist within the way that we talk, and being really inclusive, I think. Like, as I said, historically, the Septmagyar has always wanted to kind of collaborate with the Anglophone community. And we kind of need the English community as well, because sometimes we don't have the right costume designer in our community. So we reach out and we kind of bring them in and we try to teach them a few words if they don't know any, and just be really, really welcoming about it. Because as a minority, if we want it to work, we have to be able to adapt and also create positive associations with this language. So I think that having a lot of fun in French, that's how I activate it. And that's kind of where we're headed for the next few years with our programming. We want it to be really fun. And it's been hard with the pandemic, and the world is changing right now. And, you know, there's a few things that are kind of hard to process and a little bit dark. But I think that the first thing is, if we have fun together, we're capable of doing really, really great things. So I think that's how I do it. And I make sure I create conditions for people to have fun in French in our theater.
Well, I really appreciate your time today, and I wish you all the best with your, I guess, 101st year.
Yeah, exactly. We're not so many people will be looking at us. It's going to be nice. I'm enjoying this one, but it's a wild ride, so I'll be happy to catch my breath next year. Merci beaucoup, Catherine.
Merci.
Bonne journée.
That was my conversation with Marie-Ève Fontaine, theater artist and co-artistic director of the Théâtre Cercle Molière, a French language theater company in St. Boniface, Manitoba, that has just celebrated its 100th birthday. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in.
The we is how we see the world, which is that everybody is made up of lots and lots of different personalities, fantasies, attitudes, and that a multi-personality is in fact the reality, not the I personality, and that where those two things meet is the position that we're trying to work at, to break people across from seeing themselves as one-dimensional and having no potential, to seeing themselves as being almost anything they want to be, and that those different things don't have to always agree in the usual accepted way.
No Static, every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. You never know what you're gonna get.
Step into a world where stories meet sound. My name is Simmer Kaur, host of Melodies of Myth, a show that blends Indian classical and Western music with short tales of culture, history, and identity. Join me every Friday at 3 p.m. only on CFRC. And if you enjoy the music, you can find more by searching Simmer Kaur on Spotify. Tune in, unwind, and let the melodies carry you. Once again, it's Melodies of Myth, 3 p.m. every Fridays.